Meeting of the House Health and Social Services Committee will now come to order. It is 3:47 p.m. Thursday, April 27th on 2017 in Capitol Room 106. Members present are Representative Keto, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Tarr, and myself, Rep. Bonholz. For the record, we thought that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take a moment to silence your phones and take them off vibrate if you can for the duration of the meeting. Thank you. Before we begin, I want to thank Mitch Carter from House HES Secretary for Record, and Kyle Schramm. Welcome, Kyle, from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. Today we have two items on the agenda. The first is House Bill 234 by Rep. Kuttenberg, and the second is House Bill 236 by Representative Kawasaki. So we're going to go ahead and start off with House Bill 234, which is extending the Alaska Healthcare Commission. Representative Kuttenberg, if you and your staff, when he comes back into the room, can come forward and put yourself on the record and present the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for hearing this bill. House Finances meeting, and we'll be done at 4. So Representative Kawasaki probably will have time to come down and
change
it to another. So House Bill 234 is a multifaceted, complex bill. I say that obviously in humor because if you start the other way, something dies. But it's just extending the termination date of the Alaska Health Commission. Over the years, it has had an interesting history. Governor Palin initiated with executive order, and then it passed under Governor Parnell. And over the years, it did some good work, had some good reports. There's some good recommendations over the years, and in this, it's scheduled to sunset now. It was in 2017. In this environment, it seemed to me it is a very appropriate tool for the state to have, whether it's extension of the ACA or a modification of it or repeal or things that are happening with Medicaid or expansion or any of those other things. The commission is a tool for the state, and there is a zero fiscal note because it is not expected to at this time cost anything, because I think in the past it's been the past few years, and part of the ledge audit will show you it said it hasn't been doing anything because it wasn't funded and it wasn't functioning. But when you go back to the years when it was funding, it was doing some considerable things. It did not have, from my perspective, as large a perspective on the state health care as I would have liked, but it did do considerable things, did make considerable recommendations. And what happens sometimes in this building is agencies make recommendations and come out with reports, and nobody looks at them, and then they sit on a shelf. And years later, somebody says, well, why didn't you do anything? And he says, well, it's not the department's job to do something. It's the legislative's job to do something. So this is a tool for the administration, for the Department of Health and Social Services, to have the ability to respond in a cohesive way, to respond to the certainly it's a changing face of health care. So it might at this second be steady and look like it's static. It certainly, if you look down the road or if you look turn around, it doesn't. So that is basically what it does. It extends a tool that is for the state to be able to respond adequately to changes in the healthcare environment.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Gutner? Representative Sullivan-Munner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. I actually worked for Governor Palin when this was worked through for initiation. And I'm looking over the report conclusion, Mr. Kuttenberg, with regard to the report where they do make a recommendation to not further this particular commission. And it doesn't look like it's based on a fiscal challenge as much as it looked like there was a challenge with regard to developing a statewide health plan within this particular commission. Can you expound on that? Just
sure.
Can I get us a little history there?
Thank you. Well, you're talking about a couple different audits, and the last one was, if I remember right, the audit said it wasn't operating in the state's best interest because it wasn't being funded and it wasn't functioning. Previous to that, and Chris Curtis is here to address our audits, I think there was some consideration on what the overall, and the department has a disagreement on her and that, but I'll let them speak for themselves also. What is the larger picture that the state should be doing? Should it be looking at the entire, to build a comprehensive plan from the top down? Personally, I agree with that. But if you look at what they did do, it is considerable recommendations when they tour into things, and some of those are in the audits, and some of those are in their, I'm not sure if they're in the audits, but they're in the recommendations are considerable, things that over the years look at. But also, you will find that some of the participants in the commission members thought they should have been doing more also. But the commission, by the chair's own conversations, they narrowed their focus to doing an entire thing. So there's a couple things they didn't want to talk about and they didn't want to deal with, so they didn't. So they did things that they wanted to do and didn't do the things that they didn't want to do. Unfortunately, I agree with the audit. We should look at the entire picture of the state and come up with something. But when you think about healthcare, it is so vast. Our health and social services is such a vast department and all the components of it that I'm not actually sure how you develop that, or you just pick one health, one aspect of it, and go at it like that. And if you're behavioral health or public health or clean water, but I think there's a lot to do. I think we should have started at the top down, and they didn't, and that has been a concern for some people over the years who have involved.
I'd like to just step in for a moment and recognize that Representative Johnson has joined us. I apologize for not doing that earlier.
And Madam Chair, just quickly follow up.
Yes.
Thank you, Representative. I appreciate that feedback. And then if we could have, at some point, Chris come up and give a little overview, too. Thank you.
So for my one aspect to that question is, when you look at the work that has been done, the recommendations that are on the table, we really haven't even begun to address those. Right? There's a lot of things that the legislature over the years that this has happened has not really bit into and taken on.
Is there any other questions for Representative Guttenberg? I have a question for you myself. When you were considering, you know, introducing this, you know, essentially right now you've just extended the date on the commission. Did you consider revisiting the scope of the commission's work at all?
Well, I think this, yes. But I think the scope is very broad now, I think statutorily, and I don't have that in front of me right now. But I think the scope is very broad. I think the job of what the commission is actually going to do will be the job of the commission, right? There's nobody currently on it. There's one person designated who that will be, and that would be the state's chief medical officer. Everybody else is a commissioner or a designee or somebody from the hospital association. Mm-hmm. That group getting together at that point will be responding to whatever the department brings them into, and I think the language is broad enough they can do anything they want to do.
Okay. The other thing I know is that there isn't a fiscal note, and that was one of the concerns that was addressed in the audit. How do you anticipate them, you know, accomplishing their work with no fiscal note?
Well, from what I understand in the past, a lot of the work, and we're only talking about some travel and per diem, from what I understand, there is no anticipated meeting called for this commission. So until you actually have anticipated costs and know what they are, there will be a zero fiscal note, right? If you're giving somebody additional responsibilities, then here's what it's going to cost to do something new. If you're just extending something without changing anything, then there's no fiscal note to address the changes. If it's something that they've already been doing, it's already built into their budget.
Representative Johnson, do I see a question?
Representative Gutenberg, when did the commission stop existing?
Well, I think the technical answer to that would be at the last election, right? I think it lapsed when changes in certain members of the legislative members changed. It hasn't actually lapsed yet, but it hasn't been functioning because it hasn't been funded and it hasn't, the commission hasn't been called. There's no required meetings. There's no required functions. And if the commissioner doesn't call a meeting, they're not doing any.
So I'm a follow-up. So I'm just, as far as the fiscal note, I'm slightly confused because you're saying there isn't a fiscal note because there's no increase in cost because there hasn't been a functioning commission. But currently, am I wrong to assume that there has not been any budgeted amount for this commission?
From what I understand, what the state responsibility in a commission has been mostly for staffing and people whose responsibilities it is. People like the hospital association seat, the hospital association pays for that. And outside of that, it would be teleconferencing, and I'm not even sure there's per diem involved for those people. There might be some travel. But until they anticipate meeting, there's no anticipated cost.
Hey, thank you.
This may be a case of a chicken and egg scenario, that perhaps in order to ensure that the commission has what it needs in the way of funding as well as a directive, that we might want to address as we move forward with it.
Madam Chair, we go through this all the time in finance. Why is there a fiscal note? Why is there a zero fiscal note?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. During the other, all right, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just thinking back to previous presentations by the commission, and I think that they had completed all of the work that they had set out in the original set of, there was a certain work plan that they were going to complete, and then those recommendations did come through. And so I'm just wondering if maybe that's why there hasn't been any work happening. So they completed that work, but then, and maybe that was just last year, but then in the intervening time, if no new people had been appointed or something, because I'm just noticing it without this, that it'll lapse in 2017. And so you probably wouldn't start new work if you thought you were just going to be dissolved in a few months. Does that sound right?
No, because I wish it was, because I think it goes back farther than that. I think they have not actively been working as a commission since the last report, which was, let's see right here, I'll turn this page, November 16. This is the ledger audit, I'm sorry. But they have lots of recommendations over the years that have been put forward, and few of them have been done. And there's been a new administration has come in the last 2 years, and the commissioner was on, the commissioner of health and social service was a member of the commission in a previous role.
Mm-hmm.
I do have in the ledger audit, I do have a copy of their budget, and it was $350,000 so from 13 to 15. So, but the zero fiscal note recognizes they don't have any. I mean, they want it as a tool. I've asked them from the beginning of the year, do you want to continue this commission? And getting an answer was slow. We have to meet. We have to have a conversation. And finally, they sent them the bill. Here's the bill. I drew it up. Do you want to continue this? And they said, very much so. And they haven't. And the zero fiscal note is theirs, right? It's not somebody else's. The zero fiscal note is from the commissioner's office.
Right.
That's our anticipated cost.
So I believe having heard a brief recap of the audit from Chris Curtis, and perhaps this might be an appropriate time to bring her up, that actually part of the challenge was that they were defunded and therefore there wasn't additional work that could be done, and so they essentially stopped acting moving at a certain point. But let's welcome Chris Curtis up. She's I'll go ahead and let you put yourself on the record and then sort of present your testimony, and then we'll move to questions.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor. In your meeting packets, you have two audits, one dated 2013, one dated 2016. I'll be referring to both of them during the presentation. Just for the record, the purpose of a sunset is to determine whether a board or commission is serving the public's interest and whether it should be extended. Now, our 2013 audit was the first time the commission was subject to sunset, and we did include in the report some background information about its creation. It starts on page 5. Mm-hmm. The Healthcare Commission was created as a way to reform healthcare in Alaska. It was first established, as Representative Gutenberg said, in 2008 by administrative order, and then it was established in statute in 2010. The legislature intended for the commission to achieve reform through developing a statewide health plan. Now, the health plan was to be based on education, sustainability, management efficiency, healthcare effectiveness, public-private partnerships, research, personal responsibility, and individual choice. The original commission in 2008 initially said it is not our plan or not our responsibility to develop a plan. Instead, the commission focused its efforts on specific policy recommendations. When the commission was reestablished in statute in 2010, members agreed to continue the prior commission's work, and they adopted the same general approach. Rather than working on a state plan, the commission collected information from various cost studies and developed high-level policy recommendations. The commission also established general priorities, which did evolve into a strategic framework. And that framework is part of the 2013 audit. It is Appendix A to the report. Overall, the 2013 audit concluded that the commission was operating in the public's interest. However, improvements in developing a state plan were needed in order to justify its continued existence. The commission's statutory purpose is to provide recommendations for and foster the development of a statewide health plan to address the quality, accessibility, and availability of health care for citizens of the state. The legislature intended the commission to work collaboratively with the department to develop this comprehensive health plan. And though various policy recommendations were developed, the commission and the department, this is our take in 2013, had not collaborated to develop the plan. So we recommended only a 3-year extension at that point. We did discuss that with the Commissioner of Health and Social Services and with the commission. We, you know, was 3 years enough time for you to develop this plan? We are on the same page at that point, and we recommended a 3-year extension. We did conclude that the commission was active. We were very positive in all the activities that they had accomplished. There were several studies had been conducted. A foundation for a plan had been created. Our concern, though, was this strategic framework that you see as Appendix A. It lacked actionable components for implementation. It did not specify specific actions that were supposed to be taken, time frame for completion, the organization responsible for taking action, definition of what a successful outcome, and how it was going to be measured and monitored. So they were missing that actionable plan. And we felt that without that, the activities of the commission may not effectively impact health care in Alaska. This lack of a plan was caused by some ambiguous statutes outlining responsibilities and a lack of coordination between the department and the commission. Now, if you look to the audit in 2013, page 35, you will see the department's response to the audit. We had a recommendation. The main recommendation was for the commission to work with the department's commissioner to identify and define responsibilities and roles and pursue development of the plan accordingly. And the department on page 35 partially concurred with that recommendation. They felt that we were did not give that framework that has been created enough credit as a plan. And it did have a lot of recommendations and a lot of progress had been made. But the commissioner goes on to say, in support of the recommendation, I will provide a memo to the commission that delineates the responsibilities. I will, next page, I will work with the commission, and I will start going to the meetings and actively participate to work forward in creating this actionable plan. He will direct the HSNS leadership and commission staff to collaborate on the development of a measurable action plan to implement the commission's significant policy recommendations. So after this report was issued, there was a House Finance Budget, a House Finance Subcommittee on Health and Social Service hearing held October 22nd. That was in Fairbanks, chaired by Representative Newman. I was there, presented the report. Commissioner Stewart was there to respond to the report. And I went back and listened to it just to make sure my memory was correct on what was discussed. He had some comments that I think would be useful, and these are his words. Commissioner Stewart states, "Where I've struggled with the Healthcare Commission is that the recommendations that come out of them are not useful. I don't say that in a negative sense. It's been at the 50,000-foot level. And if you're going to affect change in healthcare for Alaskans, it can't be at the 50,000-foot level. It has to be focused. You can't be, we have to reform the way payments are to be made. That doesn't help me. It's getting to the specifics. They are now beginning to dive down into the specifics, and I think that continued involvement with them will lead to a meaningful plan going forward. Medicaid needs to be part of that. Medicaid is a big part of your budget as well as a big part of my budget. And it's how to get to that, how to narrow the focus, how to do a better job." So Representative Stewart's on board with the sunset, the recommendations. So flash forward 2016. We come in for this sunset. We look at the meetings. We listen to the minute. We read the minutes, listen to the meetings. We see that initially there was momentum. Mm-hmm. The committee met. They discussed about, okay, how can we shift our focus to moving forward an action plan? Mm-hmm. Those initial momentum it dwindled, and we found no significant progress in developing a plan, and the commission was defunded July 1st, 2015, so FY 2016. And just to clarify a few questions that came up, the commission had been part of the commissioner's budget, so all the funding would come through the regular budget cycle. So just to go back to the 2016 report.
Excuse me, Ms. Curtis. Could you remind me? I missed the month that the commission was defunded.
FY16. So July 1st, 2015.
Okay, thanks.
So page 22 of the 2016 audit is the department's response to this, the most recent recommendation. And our conclusion was for 2016 that the commission was not operating in the public's interest by not meeting its statutory purpose in developing a plan, and we recommended not extending the commission. Mm-hmm. And the department did not agree with that conclusion. And on page 22, they disagree that the legislature had intended to have this action plan. Mm-hmm. And they stated that they did not agree with us back in our prior audit, and they are not on board with the need for this actionable plan. So, again, we do reaffirm our recommendations that the commission is not serving a public interest by ensuring that its work, its good work, somehow translates to change.
Representative Sullivan Leonard, you have a question?
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you done with your
yes.
comment there?
Yes,
okay. Through the chair, just a real quick question. Looks like there were many years here that were put into the formation of this particular commission, and a lot of time, energy, and talent, I think, put into this. It's unfortunate that the recommendation is to not move forward with this, but I guess, you know, after 7 years or so, if something's not working, why keep funding it? Why keep moving forward? So is there anything that's identifiable that was a real disconnect within the commission to actually formulate what they should have been presenting, yet maybe went down another avenue that maybe they shouldn't have? Or are we at the point that maybe that was a beginning point and that maybe we could move forward with some of the tools they've been able to obtain and then move forward with that?
Through the chair, mm-hmm. I believe the commission's done a lot of excellent work. and a foundation has been laid. It's just taking it to that next level of how to take those recommendations into making change. The commissioner in our discussions, the Commissioner Struer in the previous audit, he took a lot of accountability on himself, on the department's role in moving towards implementing those recommendations, and he was very on board in helping that accomplish. And there was a change in administration, so there. And then we did see through the budget process a lot of frustration on behalf of House Finance in questions they asked and responses they were given, and frustration with activities of the commission at that point. So I believe that the foundation has been laid, and in continuing it is certainly a possibility, but there's some ambiguity in the statutes, and there's some, I think, a lack of clarity on what they should be doing going forward. So I believe that if they are extended, that would really have to be clarified.
Sure. Representative Johnston.
Yes, and it's afternoon, and my senior cells are breaking down. And I can't, what is the name of the committee that is going to be giving us a report, I think July 1st, as far as the health care?
The Alaska Health Care Authority.
And what is the overlap between these two commissions, or is there any?
Through the chair, I do not know.
Representative Gunmer.
A question that we asked as well. So the health care commission here is designed to do an overall state health care plan. That was the intent. And the authority is designed to bring all of the state entities that pay the public entities together to figure out if there's a way to coordinate efficiencies in pay. It's kind of a place to go to do larger and larger pooling. We're going to coordinate efforts to do larger pooling for prescription drugs, but just with public entities,
because healthcare insurance,
private entities
for healthcare coverage,
whether
state employees,
the state, and all of the corporations and the municipalities and the cities, and to coordinate their efforts to do a better job with the public entities. And that is significantly different than this, otherwise there would be no point in doing this. But they are very different because they don't have a specific goal towards doing better efficiencies and being able to negotiate better deals for the state and all those entities.
Follow up through the chair. So the current commissioner, isn't it also to see what efficiencies can be gained, not just in pooling, but isn't it an overall health efficiencies? Or is it just in purchasing power?
Well, theoretically, one would get you the other, right? But it's not an overall health care plan. It's to bring them together to pool better, to work together on delivering services, and defining what that services would be, what this commission would be doing.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Representative, did you have a question?
Oh, I'm sorry,
no, proceed. Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's a part of me that really values the work that's gone into the last 7-8 years with regard to this commission, but I failed to see the real plan in place for how we can move forward. For the maker of this particular bill, would you consider a friendly amendment whereby we would consider 1-year extension, where the commission could come back with a clear plan so that we could at least have something come before us to say, all right, this is the information we gathered prior, this is the plan that we could place now, and this is what we're looking at moving forward?
Well, I would let the department speak for what they're capable of doing or what their intent is to doing, to mm-hmm. do whether they whether just they just want this as a tool in their toolbox, or they actually have a plan to implement this and do things. One reason why I've supported this extension is, if we don't do it, then we don't have anything, right? Then somebody down the road is going to have to recreate this, right? So I would, at this point, if Ms. Erickson is online, she is the person from the department who was going to speak to this. Is anybody online? Is Ms. Erickson online?
I believe she's on the off-net.
Okay.
Hello, this is Deb Erickson.
Hello, Ms. Erickson. Did you hear the question?
I did hear the question. Would you like me to give you a little bit of background on the commission first, or just answer the question?
I think enough background to contextualize your answer would be very useful. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and back up just a little bit then and just start with saying good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. And for the record, my name is Deborah Erickson. I currently work in the Office of the Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services, and I primarily work in helping to coordinate and implement the Medicaid reforms that were implemented under SB 74, the Medicaid reform bill that was passed last year, and also support other health policy analysis work for the department. But I was formerly the executive director for the Alaska Healthcare Commission for the entire time that it was funded and active. And so Commissioner Davidson asked me to testify today to give you a little bit of the background on the commission and then to answer any questions you might have from the commission's former commission's perspective, as well as the department's perspective. So thank you for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of HB 234, and I wanted to thank Representative Guttenberg, too, for his efforts to improve health care in Alaska and his identifying the importance of at least maintaining on the books the ability to bring the statute back at some point if either the governor or the legislature deems it's necessary to. The administration does support HB 234, and you all should have a letter of support for the bill from Commissioner Davidson. And as Representative Guttenberg noted earlier, Commissioner Davidson, in one of her earlier roles, did serve on the commission in the seat designated for the tribal health system. Governor Palin initially had appointed her to that position, and I think Governor Parnell had reappointed her at one point. I think you probably have a gist of kind of the background of the commission, where Governor Palin initially established it under an administrative order, and then the legislature established the commission in statute in 2010, and there are designated in the statute 11 voting members, all of whom the governor appoints, and representing various stakeholders. There's a seat for healthcare consumers, the Veterans Administration, the State Chamber of Commerce, the State Hospital and Nursing Home Association, and a number of other type provider healthcare provider groups. There also were three ex officio seats on the commission, one for the Office of the Governor, one for the House, and one for the Senate. For most of the life of the commission, including the early iterations before the statute was passed, Representative Keller had served and was a real active member in the representing the House. And for the Senate, Senator Olson and then Senator Coghill both had been actively involved in representing the Senate on the commission. And for the governor's office, instead of someone from the governor's office, we had initially the director of the Division of Insurance, and then when she retired, the director of the Division of Retirement and Benefits. So it was a real helpful way to connect beyond the Department of Health and Social Services with some of the other state agencies that were involved in regulating or purchasing health care. And I don't want to repeat too much of what you've heard so far. And maybe just talk very briefly about the commission's process and respond a little bit to what our perspective had been in response to the audit, tell you a little bit about what we did accomplish quickly, and then respond to the questions about the fiscal note. When the commission was first established, just for a little bit of a historical context, the Affordable Care Act had just been passed in 2010 when the legislature passed the initial bill. The president had just signed the Affordable Care Act into law. The commission was actually the first and probably the only public entity in the state, public body, that conducted an analysis. We contracted with ICER to conduct a study on the impact of the Affordable Care Act in Alaska. And subsequent to that, each year the commission would prepare essentially a chart pack report and include information in our annual report to the legislature on the status of implementation of various aspects of the Affordable Care Act in the state. And then we spent each time, and we really did think in terms of kind of a planning process as we worked through our process from year to year. And each year, up front, we had identified a vision for improving health and health care in the state and had three measurable objectives that we were tracking related to that vision. And we had identified eight what we called core strategies for transforming the health care system, and just a few examples of those. One of those was increasing price and quality transparency, and another was paying for value, moving away from kind of the fee-for-service payment structure, increasing the focus on prevention, engaging employers to improve health plans and employee wellness. And we had actually strong engagement and collaboration with private employers, and the last sunset audit, we actually had quite a few resolutions of support from private and public employers in the state for continuing. So those are just some examples of those eight core strategies. We had a series of outcomes defined for each of those. And then within each of those eight core strategies, we did provide more than 75 specific policy recommendations. They didn't get down into the weeds and kind of that next steps that that Chris Curtis was referring to, and referring to former Commissioner Strewer's suggestion that the next steps would be getting more into the operational details of how those should be, those policy recommendations should be implemented. So each year we would do a new study, and sometimes two, of the current system, just to add to the body of knowledge of what's going on with healthcare in the state. So, for example, we contracted with ICER a couple of other times, one to do an economic analysis of healthcare spending and healthcare drivers, cost drivers in the state. They also conducted a survey of Alaskan employers and their health benefit practices in the state for us. And then we've contracted with an actuarial firm to do a detailed actuarial study looking at the differences between pricing and reimbursement for healthcare services in our state compared to other states in our region and other states that were more similar to Alaska and how our healthcare system works. So those are just an example of some of the studies, and I continue to get phone calls from the media and from policy leaders and others asking for information, additional information, and referencing those studies. So I know that they've added value just in increasing kind of the educational component and understanding of what we're doing. And in terms of communicating with the legislature, too, I thought I would just mention that we did produce, under the statute, we were required to produce an annual report each year by January 15th, and we did provide that annual report each year. And in addition, we testified numerous committees, and at one point I counted over 15 committee hearings that we presented to over the course of about 4 years. And we'd meet with legislators individually as well. So we try to be as involved and engaging as possible. To the question about the fiscal note and what the department is supporting, I guess I would just reinforce that what Representative Guttenberg had mentioned earlier, the commission really did end for all intents and purposes with the last election. The commission was based out of the commissioner's office. The new commissioner was very supportive of the commission, but there was a lot going on with the transition, and it really was right then at the transition during that legislative session in 2015 when the legislature decided to remove the funding for the commission. And at that point, where Commissioner Davidson was moving forward and actively supporting the work of the commission, when the body was defunded and we were starting to go through for that very first year some pretty deep budget cuts that were impacting direct services to clients and individual Alaskans, without the legislative support for the funding, the department couldn't continue. And so the commission just ended at that point. The department and the administration does support this bill. Our understanding, though, is that the intent is to essentially keep the commission statutory authority on the books. Should either the governor or the legislature at some point deem it necessary to reactivate the commission and to have that statutory authority available to move quickly. I don't believe that the department would be able to support reactivating the commission without funding appropriated by the legislature. And so that's why the department has filed a zero fiscal note. It really is with the understanding, and we tried to explain that in the narrative on the fiscal note, that the intent of this bill is to keep the commission on the books. We want to be able to be supportive and to move quickly to reactivate it should the legislature deem it necessary to reactivate it with funding at some point in the future. But then the legislature would not have to start from the beginning with recreating starting from scratch with a new statute, essentially. So I hope that answered your questions. I'm happy to answer any additional questions you might have.
Yeah, I think we have a question from Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Hi, just wanted to follow up on my question with regard to an extension of this particular commission for 1 year so that a clear established plan could be developed and brought back to the legislature for consideration of the future of this commission for the next 4 years. I'm hesitant to say, you know, here's an open piece for this commission to continue for 5 years when I'm seeing there's a disconnect, if you will, between setting the policy and then the planning aspect of this particular commission with regard to health care planning. And so how would the commissioner feel about that?
Representative Sullivan Leonard, through the chair. Without funding in the fiscal note, I don't believe that the department would have the resources to put that plan together. I would have a couple of other concerns, too, just based on my experience with the commission. One, Representative Guttenberg mentioned earlier that there are no members of the commission right now. The commission members under the statute are appointed to 3-year staggered terms, and the most recently appointed commission members' terms had expired in January 2017. So if the administration was to move to reactivate the commission, it would take some time to recruit and get the governor's appointment of those 11 members. There is one of the 11 is in place, and the statute designates the Department of Health and Social Services chief medical officer as the department's representative on the commission, as well as the chair of the commission. And so Dr. Butler would be the leader of the commission and is the one member who is in place right now. We also would need members representing both the House and the Senate appointed and the governor's office, as well as those other 10 voting member seats. So it would take some time administratively just to get the group back together. It's been two and a half years since the commission has met, and so there would have to be some review of the prior policy recommendations and then the work to move forward on actually developing that actionable plan. So one, I kind of a two-part answer to your question. I think the 1 year would not be enough time to reactivate the commission. And two, I don't believe the department would be prepared to reactivate the commission unless the legislature was prepared to fund through a fiscal note and provide that. To the point that earlier there was a question about getting a little more clarity from the legislature, too, on the commission's very broad in some places and very vague in other places mandate, a suggestion that if the legislature were to deem it necessary to fund the commission again at some point in the future, that perhaps without having to open up the legislation, some legislative intent with more specific direction to the commission might get us a little closer to where the legislature would like us to go and would like us, what the legislature would like us to do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. This was a helpful sort of recap. I think, did you, I'm looking at Chris Curtis in the room as well. I think she had been, maybe had some question, had a potential response to your question earlier about the potential length, changing the length of the commission. Did you want to respond,
Ms.? Thank you, through the chair. We do, the Division Legislative Audit does the sunset audit the year before it terminates. So giving it a one-year extension, that means we have to be doing the audit right now. And that isn't logistically possible. So it's never really an option to do a one-year extension logistically in our office. 2 year would be the fastest we could get back in.
I have a question about have we done a sort of a similar bill in the past to extend authority for a commission without actually funding it? Is there precedent for this in the past, or is this something where we'd be breaking some ground? Do we know?
If I may, I don't know. I can't think of anything, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean we didn't. But
maybe it's something we could research a little bit and try to find out if there's precedent for this. We're sort of in a situation where there may be, there's a couple of highly divergent paths, one of which could just be sort of keeping it on the books and another could be a re-envisioning of the healthcare commission that might help it to serve our current needs when we know so much of our state's budget is spent on healthcare, and healthcare is such a huge driver in the economy, and healthcare costs are out of control, and just addressing costs alone isn't really the solution. I think, as we've discussed in other committee meetings and other contexts, that you have to get people to change behaviors, and you have to make sure that quality is remains. And in reviewing the charge of the healthcare commission, that's a huge charge, and it's not a surprise to me that there was some disconnect between what the commission was charged to do, which was really 50,000 foot, and what the department is expected to deliver or hopes to deliver. I could see that there's a big disconnect there. So I guess I'm curious to find out whether or not the sort of keeping it on the book strategy has been applied elsewhere, and if that's the best strategy to implement in the short term as we try to find maybe thoughtful strategies for addressing all of our healthcare issues, or whether we want to dig in now and try to, revision what the healthcare commission looks like in a really substantive way now while we're addressing huge fiscal challenges as a state.
Well, I would encourage you, whatever the outcome in the on the HES homepage, the Health Heritage Commission's reports are considerable, mm-hmm. right? She mentioned her core strategies from 13, just using best available evidence in decision making, mm-hmm. increasing price efficiency and transparency, pay for value, engage employees and improve health care plans and wellness, mm-hmm. enhance quality and efficiencies of care on the front end, increase dignity and quality of care for serious and terminally ill patients, focus on prevention, build the foundation of sustainable health care. Then there's an index for all these things. I mean, this is a, whatever you start with, the first thing they're going to do is say what was done before. And there was a lot done before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one-year extension is not really feasible because of the way audit operates. And with the department not being funded for this year, and the timeline and what they're doing, you know, it's at the end of the day, you know, I've gone through a lot of this as well internally in my office with my staff and where are we at, what are we doing, is what is the best thing to do. Just having a tool, we can rewrite the entire statute, doing a legislative focus, and then one day Congress comes along and does something to the affordable health care, and we have to go back and refocus what it is. In the statute, there is enough broad guidelines. They can do anything they want. And, you know, they can do the vision. They can focus on a part of it. But, you know, without the funding and the department's not caring for the funding, they're not going to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. We have one person in the room who is scheduled to testify. I think that's Jeannie Monk. I'm going to ask her to proceed forward. Thank you. All right, can you introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony?
Hi, for the record, my name is Jeannie Monk, and I'm Vice President of Policy and Programs for the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. So thanks for the opportunity to provide comments today. I had some comments prepared, and it all seemed very simple and straightforward until I listened to the whole discussion, and there's been some really good issues raised, which kind of brings to mind kind of some of the complexities. Mm-hmm. The Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association supports HB 234 and the effort to extend the Health Care Commission. The purpose of the commission, according to the statute, is very high level: provide recommendations for and foster the development of a statewide plan to address quality, accessibility, and availability of health care for all citizens. So, big task. We at ASHNA had one of the 11 voting members participated in the commission in the past. And while the commission is not currently funded and hasn't been active, we believe there's value in maintaining the commission in statute. There is much attention in the legislature and in the public on healthcare services and costs, and we think having the commission available as a policy tool could be of value to the state in the future. So the broad purpose of the commission, we believe, is sound, and keeping the structure in statute makes sense. We would support the comments related to re-envisioning what the commission would do if funding was provided in the future. And as someone who attended many of the Healthcare Commission meetings, I can share with you that ASHNA did not always agree with the positions taken by the commission or with all the topics the commission chose to study. However, we supported the process and the discussion, and having the environment where different stakeholders could come together was valuable. So we see that there's potential of the commission to play a role in healthcare policy development in the future, and extending the sunset date might make it possible to use the structure of the healthcare commission if desired in the future without having to recreate it in statute. So for this reason, we support HB 234 to extend without funding, to extend the authority in statute without funding until we're actually ready to figure out what it needs to do.
Mm-hmm. Questions? Representative Johnston.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. So did this give you, or did you feel this gave you a form that you didn't have before the commission was developed as far as working on major health issues?
Yes, it did. It was a forum to bring together multiple sectors of the healthcare industry for discussion. And I, so yes.
So a follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
So was it the formality of it and you didn't feel that you had it in discussions with legislators or with the governor or the, you know, the commissioner or with other members of the medical community? Did this formalize it enough that that was why you felt it was a better forum than, as everybody is at this point trying to meet the same goals of improving health care, you didn't have?
I think if the Health Care Commission existed today, the environment is very different than it was 6 years ago. When I've been working for ASHNA for more than 6 years, and for the first 4 years, there was very little statewide discussion about health care and costs and services, mm-hmm. and even very little discussion within the legislature. Mm-hmm. Now there's a tremendous amount. And so I think the interest, and a lot of that is driven by fiscal issues, obviously. So I think if the Health Care Commission existed today, what it might be focused on might be different. And having that environment where stakeholders could come together could be very helpful.
One more follow-up.
Yeah.
And would this, how do you see it integrating with the Medicaid report that will be coming out on July 1st? The commission.
Not
Medicare.
Through the chair.
Reform.
Johnson, I am not really familiar with all the ins and outs of the health care authority, but I see them as being pretty different things. The health care commission really focused on the entire health care system, where the health care authority has a much more limited scope.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else have any other questions for Jeannie Monk while we've got her here? All right. So this is a big topic, and we needed more time to talk about it today than I think we'd originally planned on. I'm going to go ahead and set this bill aside for future consideration by the committee. I think that there's a lot of opportunity maybe to explore sort of revisioning what the Health Care Commission can do, and I look forward to having many more robust conversations about this in the near future. We're now going to turn our attention to HB 236, which is Representative Kawasaki's bill extending the senior benefits payment program. We'll hear a presentation from the bill sponsor, take invited testimony, and then set aside the bill for future consideration of the committee. Representative Kawasaki, can you,
Madam Chair,
come forward? Yeah.
Are you keeping the public hearing open?
It was not public. It was invited testimony only. Thank you. Yeah.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. For the record, Representative Scott Kawasaki, District 1 in Fairbanks.
Hi. For the record, I'm Mercedes Colbert, staff to Representative Kawasaki.
And Madam Chair, since I wasn't sure if I was going to be here, and she made a pretty formal script, I'm going to let her direct the bill, and then just wanted to, again, thank the committee for hearing this bill today.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you. Again, Mercedes Colbert, as introduced, HB 236 would extend the senior benefits program sunset clause to the year 2022. Without legislative action, the program would end in 2018. The senior benefits program protects low-income seniors by providing modest cash assistance to pay for expenses like food, heating, electricity, transportation, and prescription medication. This program was established in 2007, and it currently provides assistance to nearly 12,000 Alaskans ages 65 and older. The benefit is based on income at 75%, 100%, and 175% of the federal poverty level. Those who qualify currently receive benefits ranging from $76 to $250 a month. And there was a small error in the sponsor statement I'll go back and fix. The senior benefits program is the successor to longevity bonus, and that was created in 1972. There's a fact sheet in the members' packets that can give you more history about the program. We received several handwritten letters from some seniors in Matsu Senior Center that were very touching. They were recipients of senior benefits. Each of them discussed how they already reduced their expenses on what many consider luxuries, like going out to eat or going to the movies, fancier foods and cable and internet access, and all little things that we all take for granted every day with moderate or higher incomes.
They talk about the stress of living on a fixed income and how the small amount of money they're qualified to receive can make the difference between a balanced meal and eating canned food for dinner. Mm-hmm. Administrators and advocates often say that seniors who are eligible actually don't take advantage of the program. So it's clear that it's a modest amount of money that can go a long way for seniors of lower income. Largely, it's a bipartisan issue. It goes back to the sunsets being extended in 2011 and in 2014. And it's actually been usually reintroduced by former Representative Hawker to extend each time. And it's the last time it was extended in 2014, it had 33 co-sponsors in both bodies. And it has a long history in our state in making sure that we protect seniors who spend a lifetime building the state. So and I think that's about all I have for presenting the bill.
All right. Thank you. Is there any questions for Ms. Colbert or for Representative Kawasaki? Representative Sullivan-Leonard.
Thank you. I appreciate Representative Kawasaki bringing this bill forward. Just looking at the number of recipients, is there a process now that we are following for new applicants to apply for this particular benefit, or has that all been cut, and so we're just paying for those existing seniors?
So through the chair, Representative Sullivan-Leonard, the number of people who are beneficiaries is not a static number. It changes from time to time. It changes as people move out, move on, mm-hmm. Decide that they don't want the benefit or are deceased within that year. So the numbers do change a lot. There are major fluctuations. The key factor, I think, is ensuring that there's enough money within the budget. We've been budgeted roughly the same amount every year for the last probably – well, we have somebody that will address exactly how many years that's been, but it's for the last several years that I've been on Finance Committee, it's been roughly at the $20 million level, and it's slightly lower this year. Because of that, and because of the increase in beneficiaries, or decrease, depending upon the year, sometimes the payments will take effect differently. And so, and just by way of a change, there was a change in last October 1st of 2016, where the payments were $76 for the people who make the most, and that was an increase from $47 a month, which was expected. So it really does fluctuate based on those two factors.
Sure. Through the chair, I guess my question was, can anyone apply for this, or? I was trying to get at is like an open enrollment time for someone to apply for it, or how is this dispersed? Because I understand how the numbers can fluctuate based on movement or what have you, but I'm trying to figure out, you know, was there a stopping point where people could not apply for these benefits anymore, or how does the process work?
Through the chair, Mercedes Colbert, we do have the division director online to be more specific on the application process. But it is my understanding that it's honestly, I think it would be better if we just have her answer.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Is that Monica Windham?
Yes.
Yeah. I was looking behind you. I was like, I think she's here. All right. Can we have Ms. Windham come to the front of the room? Thank you.
For the record, my name is Monica Windham. I'm the director for the Division of Public Assistance. Through the chair, Representative Sullivan-Leonard, we have not stopped taking applications. There's not a specific open enrollment period. An individual can apply at any time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. What a simple answer. I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Did you have anything else you want to share with the committee? Any other questions for Ms. Windham while we have her? All right. Well, thank you. That was fairly simple, wasn't it?
Yes.
We do have a couple of other people that were invited for testimony, and it looks like we've got Ken Hollander with AARP at the Anchorage LAO.
Good afternoon. This is Ken Hollander. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP Alaska. AARP Alaska has 85,000 members, and we are very pleased to be in support of the continuation of the senior benefit program. Without action, the program will sunset next summer. And I can tell you that last year when there was to be reductions in the amounts and even questions of whether the program could continue facing state budget cuts, our office got a number of calls from very panicked seniors who depend just incredibly much on the benefits that they get from this program. It's hard to imagine, it's hard for me to imagine how anybody could live on $920 a month, which is basically the lowest income level there at 75% of the federal poverty level, or even at $2,000 a month in Alaska. And these are people that do not have the option to go out and supplement their income with a part-time job, and really have very little capacity to cut expenses by being more frugal. These are people who are living on the edge, who live in, and they're struggling in independent situations, not wanting to have to leave home, have to go into a higher level of care that ultimately will cost the state a great deal more money per person than these small benefits do. They really do make a difference for individual people's lives. I have heard their stories, and AARP policy is that state resources should go, even in times of scarcity, to the people who are most vulnerable and most needy. And for this reason, we are very grateful for Representative Kawasaki to have initiated the reauthorization of this very important program for seniors. It's part of the safety net that that our community depends on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Helander. Are there any questions for Mr. Helander? All right, seeing none, thank you for your testimony today. We also have David Blacketer, who's the chair of the Alaska Commission on Aging, who's on the off-net, calling in from Kodiak.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is David Blacketer. I'm the chair of the Alaska Commission on Aging. And all the previous comments and testimony has been right on. And, so I'm going to basically just say I'm really, the commission, as well as myself, is definitely behind this House Bill 236 for the senior benefits program to be extended. There's very, like Ken said, there's very much needed this little bit of support that we get. I myself, my wife and I are on the Tier 3, which is we have the higher income but the lesser amount that we get. It was mentioned that we, this past year when they wanted to cut the Tier 3, which my wife and I are in, but the governor put some of the money back. So we went from $125 a month each down to $47. Then someone restored, and it was now 76, and we're very, very, very thankful for that, because we, even though we own our own mobile home and pay space rent, which is about a third of the cost for what a apartment would cost here in Kodiak. But the thing of it is that there's very little cushion. Like, for example, today I went out and had a tap in my tire or nail, had to take down and get it fixed. Well, that was $32.50. You know, that's kind of a minor emergency, but we're very thankful we had, and then the other day our vacuum cleaner gave out, and because we like to live in a clean home, we went and got an expensive vacuum cleaner at Walmart. Well, the thing is that the money that we have saved from the last couple of months for the money we get for senior benefits, we've had to have a little bit in the bank to pay for those and not put a credit card, which would cost you interest, et cetera. So we're very thankful that Scott Bukowski has put this bill in ahead of time, because why wait to the last minute? And it's kind of like the state's problem, that they have reduced income but increased bills, so they've tried to tighten their belt, as it were. Well, we here, low-income people here in the state of Alaska, have the same problem. We're just getting by now, not complaining, mind you, we're thankful, but just getting by. But, you know, instead of tightening the belt up, we're down to the end of the belt, and we got to put two more notches in to tighten some more. So that's kind of where we're at. We need this little bit of help that we get, especially the lower two tiers. I don't know exactly what they got. I think Ken mentioned something about 900 and something for the lowest part income per month. But, you know, this help is very much needed. So I strongly urge you to support this and carry this bill, HB 236, forward. And thank you. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Mr. Blackadder? Thank you very much for taking time to call in today, Mr. Blackadder. We really appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to set this bill aside for future consideration by the committee. I look forward to taking that up soon. A quick announcement prior to adjourning is that the hearing for this the committee meeting for this Saturday has been canceled. The meeting time is 4:50, or the time is 4:59. I got the hour right today. And this hearing of the House Health and Social Services Committee is now adjourned.